What up? It's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. I got a question for you guys. Do you know what the only thing better than winning your fantasy football league is? Do you? I think you do, but I'm going to tell you anyway. It's constantly reminding the other owners that you did. That's what I'm talking about. And at DraftKings.com, you can prove that you're the superior GM every week, all right? If you don't know what DraftKings is, you should by the end of this ad, all right? DraftKings is America's favorite one-week fantasy football site. One-week fantasy, that means no season-long commitments, all right? 1 week, so you can play whenever you want in a variety of contests, all right? Challenge your friends. You got friends, right?
Yes.
Well, challenge them in a custom league or join an existing one to play for your share of the millions of dollars in prizes that are up for grabs this season. Here's what you got to do. Just pick your contest, draft your players, and collect your winnings, your money, your dough, your dollars. That's it. Renew old rivalries and create new ones with your buddies by playing head-to-head with friends, coworkers, and fantasy players from all over the country. You could be playing a guy in Pakistan, a guy in Peru, and a guy in Burbank. It's that fucking cool. All right, so hurry to DraftKings.com right now. Use the promo code ALN and play for free with your first deposit in this Sunday's $1 million fantasy contest. Did you hear me? This Sunday's $1 million fantasy contest. Play for free using promo code ALN, okay? First place takes home 100 grand and a lifetime of bragging rights. This isn't fantasy as usual, baby. This is DraftKings. Welcome to the big time. Enter ALN for free entry now only at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. Go Seahawks. Fuck the Broncos. Sorry, Brad. Hey, everybody. It's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Very special episode today. Our buddy Dana Carvey returns for his second time on the podcast. It's pretty awesome to have this guy in our world, becoming buds with him. He said he'd do the podcast every week if we asked him to. Dana Carvey's one of the funniest motherfuckers on the planet. And the first episode I know you guys loved, and today is no different. Might be even better than the first one, which I don't know how you top that. But in this episode, we get into the SNL 40th reunion. Such crazy stories from that night. I'm sure you've all seen it already. His heart surgery that he had, how he was in the same hospital room next to Frank Sinatra when Frank Sinatra died. He talks about some of his other impressions, Tom Brokaw. And he gets into kind of like the fear of stand-up comedy and just his approach to it and why he's kind of let it take a backseat to what he's doing creatively right now. It's just a really awesome, hilarious, insightful conversation. Dana Carvey's one of the best. Follow him on Twitter at Dana Carvey. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy. Follow Brad on Twitter at Funny Brad. And come see me at the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington this Friday, 8 p.m. I'm really pumped. It's my first time there. Get your tickets at BingCrosbyTheater.com. It's Spokane, Washington. It's you know, it's kind of my hometown. Not really 5 hours from there, but it's in Washington State, so I'm pumped to go home and perform there. I'm bringing my pal Kelsey Cook with me. So come out and see us. Bing Crosby Theater, Spokane, Washington, 8 p.m. And, of course, tomorrow night. Oh, can't forget. Tomorrow night, October 20th, 8 p.m., the Hollywood Improv, the first live About Last Night podcast. We could not be more pumped. We're just about sold out. So get your tickets, improv.com, and come see the show. Joey McIntyre, Owen Benjamin, Brent Morin. It's a stacked lineup. We got a lot of fun surprises planned. Don't miss it. Improv tomorrow night, 8 p.m., About Last Night live podcast. Brad Williams this weekend. He's performing stand-up comedy in Des Moines, Iowa at the Funny Bone, October 21st through the 24th. Go see Brad at the Funny Bone in Des Moines, Iowa. Get your tickets at funnybone.com. And while you're on the internet, go to estoymerchandise.com, E-S-T-O-Y, merchandise.com, and get all your ALN merch, your shirts, your mugs. Bring them to the shows, support us, and we'll sign them for you. Also, I just added a recently new tour date. I'm going to be in Tempe, Arizona at the Tempe Improv, October 28th through the 31st. Really pumped about this. My first time headlining the Tempe Improv. It's one of the best clubs in the country. So if you live in Tempe, Arizona, or anywhere around that area, come see me headline the Tempe Improv, October 28th through the 31st, Tempe Improv, Tempe, Arizona. Come see me, and let's have some fun Arizona style. Wow. What was that voice? Is that it? Is that my impression of an Arizona person? Jesus Christ. Of course, continue to support the podcast. Subscribe to it on iTunes. Give it a 5-star rating and comment on the iTunes page. It takes 2 seconds. Do it right now while you're finishing up the intro. Comment on the iTunes page. 5-star rating helps us climb the charts. We've got so many dope episodes coming up. Dana Carvey today. Next week is Howie Mandel, which is so dope. That, I mean, I can't even believe we sat down with that guy. He's a beast in the entertainment world. And we're getting an iTunes feature with that episode on the podcast page. So make sure you check that out on iTunes. See the About Last Night Howie Mandel episode featured on the podcast page. Really fucking awesome. iTunes has given us a decent amount of love over the last few years, and it's really been pretty awesome to receive that. And after the Howie Mandel episode, the following Monday is our 200th episode. 200, man. We've done 200 of these motherfuckers. That episode is going to be rad. It's a compilation, a highlight reel, if you will, of the best of ALN moments. So you're going to get to relive so many episodes from the past that you've heard or haven't heard, and really some incredible. Going back to listen through these episodes to pick out these moments was pretty crazy. A, just to hear, you know, how we've grown, but to hear us in different parts of our lives and relive some of these conversations with Lisa Kudrow and Paul Feig and Tony Danza and Michael Rapaport and Santino with the Roni and the Quave shit. I mean, it was really a treat. So you guys are going to dig that. That's up in 2 weeks. So continue to subscribe on iTunes. Tell your friends to subscribe. Spread those links around. AboutLastNightPodcast.com for all past episodes. Now that we got the tour dates out of the way, those are the Twitter handles. That's the merch info. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with his second time to the show, the hilarious Dana Carvey.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day, so come on. It's about last night.
What was like your first toy you bought when you came into some dough?
The first toy was going into a Mercedes dealership in Encino, California.
Nice.
And I didn't know what I was doing, so I pointed to a coupe, a Mercedes coupe.
Yeah.
So I drove that off. I drove that for 2 days, but when the top came up, you basically had a plastic windshield for like $150,000, and I just felt trapped in it. So I dumped that and got a 420 SEL.
Yeah.
Beautiful, yeah. Nazi black. Beautiful. 30 feet long.
Beautiful Nazi black.
I threw that in.
That's like the worst thing to describe a beauty pageant contestant.
I guess. I don't know.
Oh, she's a beautiful Nazi black. She's wonderful.
I liked it. Nice. Accents? We can do accents.
Yeah. This early?
I'm
just doing an impression of your sketch, Germans Who Say Nice Things.
Kevin
was a great babysitter.
That was the thing I did with Carell. No matter how loud I did it, because it was Carell's thing.
Right.
I would just like try to match him. I'd be the first guy. Just give it everything I can. And he would just go, whoop.
Same thing. All pile into the minivan and get some frozen yogurt.
You're frozen. Yeah.
Was there somebody? See, now Brad's doing your German accent. Is there somebody else's that you did to get yours? Or
not really. That was just kind of copying the rhythm of the, you know, because it was just one line at a time.
Yeah.
When's the babysitter? Yeah. That's nice, you know. Yeah. The thing I've been playing around with, which I didn't think was that big a bit, but I was doing it at this 20-seat club, basically. I don't know, 50 seats.
Yeah.
And Kevin Pollak was there. And I did a whole set. I was with my kids. And I just, for a while, I've been playing around with the idea. You know, everyone has a Hitler joke, right? Did we talk about that last time?
I don't think so.
I don't think we did.
I think in comedy, you need a Jesus joke, you need a Lincoln joke, and a Hitler joke.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of like the yin and yang.
It's army issue. It's just like that. And I'm sure you guys have
some version.
Yeah.
My Hitler joke was like, all dictators have to have a charming side. So it's just charming Hitler. And so it's like, Goebbels, and it's just totally like the voice, it's just very fake. Yeah. Goebbels, I'm telling you, unser haircut is fabulous. Himmler never changed those jeans. So it was just Hitler being. And then I took it to more like the other day we were talking about what to do with all these Jews, and there was this awkward silence. And Goebbels, you filled that gap. I love you so much. After this whole thing is over, and by the way, can you believe what I'm actually doing it? That's the thing I don't say I love about Hitler, but that's why he'll be remembered way beyond anybody because he actually had a plan.
Yeah,
he wasn't a crazy man. I mean, they built highways and their uniforms. They actually had an actual plan,
which is still to
take over the world, which is still amazing.
Crazy.
Do insanely evil things, but we see guys on the street all the time just yelling out bad, insane things, but they never actually...
Bacon bits, potato chips! Well, like, have a good day too, sir.
I mean, that's how you woke up this morning.
They don't have a plan. Yeah. He had a plan. Of course he was evil.
So you gotta give him some respect.
Okay, great. We'll just cue the workmen. I have no idea.
Are these... by the way, are these your gardeners, or are these just...
No. This is a rented place we call the bunker for various reasons. You guys can come here if the apocalypse hits.
This is very German-centric. We have Hitler, we have bunkers...
Right. Well, my son Dex went to get a haircut with this woman in West Hollywood, and she said, "Would you like this? Is not a joke. Would you like the gay Nazi?"
That was the haircut.
That
style?
Was the haircut, which is sort of really short on the sides and then it's kind of swooping. You know,
so kind of it was.
I don't. There's never any noise in here. I don't know what that is.
It's all good.
These are too powerful.
Is that like Mike Myers and Dieter or like
kind of? I mean, I wish we had the magazine. It's just basically shaved around here and then swooping bangs, kind of. You've seen it.
Would you ever see anything to where the hairdresser says, "Would you like the gay Nazi?" And there's not a dramatic pause. Who's the person that just rolls off like, gay Nazi? Yeah, that sounds great.
Well, I was trying to show Dex, you know, part of these techniques of comedy writing. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the first thing is, what other haircuts?
Yeah.
I'll have the saucy socialist. You know, I mean, that was one. And it's just, you just go from there and then add and mix, and there's comedy.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, what do you call that? Just what if? Like, the other day we were riffing...
saucy socialist.
I don't know if this is this. People seem to like this, but the Kardashians, obviously, okay, that's another Army issue reference joke. Mm-hmm. The only take I had on that is they obviously are a global corporation. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Kris Jenner is the matriarch.
Right.
Obviously,
right.
They do have meetings. It's not arbitrary. They saturate. They break the web. They plan it. So it's just heard a meeting with Chloe. I want an ass pick by tomorrow. If I see... Nicki Minaj's ass one more time in OK Magazine, I'm going to hit the roof, all right? Deep squat, surprise, full ass, okay? Kanye, go on an award show. Say something crazy. Be an astronaut. I don't care what it is. Kim, boobies tonight. Up. Caitlin, I hate to tell you, but we got to take you back. But I don't want to go back. I'm sorry. I don't want to be a ball buster, but it's a billion-dollar piece of business. Transgender's done. It's been played out. I've already sold 3 seasons to E. I even have a title. I Change My Mind. Kate Back to Bruce. It's a billion-dollar piece of...
Kate Back to Bruce. So,
oh, man.
Anyway, that's the way my brain thinks in sketch form, which is hard in comedy clubs. I did it at your guys' show.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll be Paul McCartney and John Lennon for 7 minutes.
Yeah, but that's...
It did... amazingly well. Thank you so much for doing our show.
You guys didn't have any energy that night.
Yeah, we were...
I think you realize how much testosterone you've lost and how weak and tired you've get, and your voice gets kind of soft because you guys are just normal guys in your 30s, 20s, 30s. Just, what's up, everybody? Yeah. And also, you're in the clubs, and that means have a Friday night show.
Yeah.
Right.
And you've been paid and billed, and there's fans there, so you've got to override. And if you drop it for a second, maybe 10, 15 seconds, you look like you're, what am I doing here?
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Eat you alive.
And then the bachelorette party starts talking, and it's done.
Oh, the bachelorette party.
I mean, you had an interesting thing happen to you at our show where you let the audience pick out your next joke from your notes, and this guy takes out his phone.
Yeah.
And tries to like Instagram a pic.
I assume he did.
Of your comedy notes. Yeah.
It's hieroglyph, whatever that word is. He couldn't have, there's no bit there, but yeah, they're random words.
Sure.
But that was kind of weird.
Yeah.
And then like hands in the air.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, and then he said something.
He heckled Robin, like I'm Robin's manager.
Yeah, or something like
Robin.
That.
Like he, like
Williams?
He,
yeah,
yeah,
really?
That's what I think. What he said, and then because remember, then it got weird, and then you said, and then you as we said, you church ladied him.
Did
because
I?
Then you went, oh well, some of us are on stage, and some of us are in the audience.
Oh yeah,
it was such a
the bitch is so good. And believe me, that was the first incarnation of the church lady was dealing with audience members.
Oh no kidding!
Yeah,
wow.
We like ourselves, just the attitude, mm-hmm. and then reverse engineered it. I don't know where I got the idea, but just the branding of it kind of thing. Because
mm-hmm.
I remember Andy Kaufman would do the foreign guy.
Yeah.
I thought, wow, she's a church lady. So all, well, the Coneheads are the Coneheads, have Coneheads. So it wasn't a big leap.
Such a brilliant way to diffuse the situation, too, because you're kind of, you know, taking on the personality of somebody that they can't really get upset with after that.
Oh, no.
Because you're like,
oh, they love it.
Now you're this unassuming old lady that's assessing the situation. So
sure. It's an easy technique, and for clubs, I don't really, you know, I mean, I was at Flappers, which is the top of the Burbank food chain.
There you go.
Yeah, but a drunk woman and all that, and it was like a 5-minute thing. You know, you just go inside voices, and Mr. Mouth is moving, and most of us keep, and it's just a squeaky sound that if you didn't even know what it was saying, just, well, you know, it's like, wow, that sounds comic.
Do you ever give yourself a time frame of like, all right, I can't. Like, stay in this voice for too, like, you know, how long would you have stayed on that woman as church lady?
I would say if I was really in shape, like, you know, I've been at this 40 years in some way, started in college, but, you know, when I'm really in shape, everything goes longer. And if I'm in a small club without mm-hmm. noise, oh, man, back in the day, the late show, 30 burnt-out hippies in Haight-Ashbury, 20 minutes.
No shit.
Wow. Because if you go full circle, which, again, I don't know what we talked about in the last... Mm-hmm. I think that everybody starts out making their stone friends laugh in the car or at a frat party, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's never really concise jokes. It's usually winding down a rhythm of a catchphrase or the guy who everyone makes fun of or their professor. And it just winds into this madness. So that seemed a natural thing to try to bring on stage. But I haven't really done it much since I played the other cafe. Except recently I've been at the West Side. It requires a very small room.
Yeah.
Because once it gets to 200-300, then you're dealing with a beast.
Yeah.
You have people over, oh, that section's talking. Fuck.
A little more of a disconnect.
Yeah, this table's getting their checks. This table's, like, yeah.
So I'm shooting, I signed up to shoot a special with Netflix just because I knew that if I didn't sign up,
that's
I'd never do one. Because I fear failure, and I just, you know.
And now that kind of forces you to be like, oh, I guess now that... Now you have people calling you saying, hey, when's the special ready? I guess you have
exactly.
to get ready for
so
it.
I figure I can't compete with your special.
Thank you.
As far as just, you know, energy and conciseness.
Well,
so I'm
trying
to get them to let me do it in a small room where it's more.
Well, but see, I just do energy and yelling and lap dances to cover up the lack of material.
No, I don't think so.
You've got
I think you have all of it. I think you have all of it.
So something maybe like the Laugh Factory size, yeah? Or is that even too intense?
I don't know. I'm thinking either a small theater, something where, that we're not hearing these guys out there.
No, I think we're good. Yeah,
the podcast has started.
These guys came solely to fuck up the podcast momentum.
This bunker in an undisclosed neighborhood has triple pane glass.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like the most quiet. So it's just
So what are they using outside?
I have no idea what they're doing, and I don't think they do
small
either.
Cannon. No,
it's just tools and
stuff that was in the truck.
Noisy Bell Last Night podcast has got over 100,000 listeners. If we can like make some noise and shit,
it's a chance to get our business off the ground.
Let's do it.
It is a great voice.
It
right?
is. It's a lot of fun to do because you can kind of like you can go up and down. You can stretch words out.
Dog. You can go like that.
Like that.
I didn't do the Johnny Stoppanato bit that night.
No,
right? It's another sketch. It's just the idea of a dad trying to be present with the kids, and then this New York actor, his kid was raised by a British nanny, and the kid actually had a British accent. That's a true story.
What?
Really?
Yeah, homeschooled by a British nanny.
So
the kid developed a lot, you know. So the New York actor's like, say, I wasn't there for your birthday, you know, like a De Niro type guy. You know, oh, father, it was fine, Daddy. And then it goes on like that, and then it's like, hey, where's your brother Danny? Oh, he's with his nanny. Who's his nanny? Michael Caine, the actor. And the guy's like, well, fucking Michael Caine, the actor. You know, hey, Danny, you're 5 years old. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Daddy. I went to the swings and I swung high in the air and I came right back down and then we fed the ducks. So for me, it's like I would want to wind that into oblivion.
Yeah.
And I think comedians all have this kind of same sense of humor, right?
Yeah.
Because we know all the tricks.
Yeah.
And just the absurdity of having the distinguished Sir Michael Caine, if he's not a sir yet, he should be.
Well, a way to use that voice in an absurd way, that a five-year-old, that's his nanny, and then we fed the ducks, and then you just go, if I'm on, I'll go for the longest time. And this one duck came up, and I had a full piece of bread. And I put
White? Oh, wait.
See what I mean? Yeah.
And it's so much fun. Everyone could do that.
Oh, look at that. Michael, I didn't know you were going to be joining us.
Oh,
today.
I was going to be here because he talked about ducks, and it made me think.
See, I didn't know you guys did Michael.
Well, let the original Michael finish his bread story.
The way to take it to another level is really give yourself a code. Really make
a little late.
Hold it your nose. And you go like this and very soft. And the other hook is you go bloody up here like this. And then you go down.
A little lazily. And then sometimes you get a little angry. But you're
right, exactly.
So you go up and down. So you talk about the ducks. And that reminds me of the duck speak and say that the nanny gave to me. And said, the duck said, quack, quack.
Yeah, exactly. And then we wondered why they say quack. And Michael and I walked around going, why do they make that bloody noise? Is it saying, where's my mommy? Or is it just some sort of anxiety? Are you sure? That sounds like some kind of day at the park. So I was thinking, could I take it far enough, or is it insensitive to have it like,
sure.
Well, hey, where's Eddie? Oh, you know, he's with his daddy. She's from Mexico. You know, so back to you guys. Yeah. Hello, Daddy. Yeah.
Hey, what's going on?
It's a movie, man.
Man, it's pretty good, man. Cider House Rules, man. It's a good movie.
Hey, good movie. So the absurdity that every kid has a different accent based on the nanny.
You did. But you know what? That's a. It's
based in truth. And
as absurd.
It was
a case of truth. And my. Nephew kind of has that right now. He has a Latin nanny, and his first word was agua.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
and they kind of get into the rhythm.
And he does it in that, like he has it with a little bit of the accent
agua.
Too. Yeah. Yeah, and he's this white blonde-haired kid from Huntington Beach, and he's like,
right.
Yeah, and he's going like, you know, mommy, agua. And it's just like,
well, then you're living the bit. Yeah, yeah. So it's
the best.
It is.
I heard now on our show you did, I don't know if this is the first time you did that whole Pope bit. Was that?
That was the first time.
Yeah.
And kind of.
And you opened with that and it crushed. I mean, it was just, I guess it was.
I don't know what the angle was, that the guy's only like, you know, 72 or something, but they immediately sound like they're 105.
Yes.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. My house is a big house. See, I was a little tired. I was not in my full confidence, but I did. That did make me laugh. And I wish I committed and went further. But it did work.
It was great.
It's probably, I don't know if you guys ever do that, driving to a mic and thinking of something and then opening with it.
Yes, all the time. Yeah. Did it last night twice, and I have to because I just got back.
You get bored.
Yes. And also, I feel like a good way to relax yourself into the room and connect because I feel like they can tell if it's, anytime you do something for the first time, you're going to be more connected to it because you're going to be more focused on trying to.
Totally. And that is kind of the illusion of stand-up. And is it shameless or is it just real? Because I tell my kids this all the time. You see all the greats do it where you know they've done this bit 100 times. Mm-hmm. But to get back to the first time where you're legitimately, when you're funny with your friends and telling a story, you're kind of laughing the same time.
Yeah.
Like this meter make, I'm telling you guys, over here is crazy. So then the first time you do it, they sense all that.
Yeah.
So somehow, at least subconsciously, they knew I was just riffing the Pope thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, if I keep doing it, how much acting do you do? Where it's like, guys, I mean, you know, where you do little fake laughs.
Yeah.
Even some of our finest comics will take a pause, do a little cackle, completely artificial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or just going in the place of allowing yourself to enjoy it again.
Yeah.
But I find that the hardest part of stand up is the repetition.
Yeah. Recreating that same enthusiasm, right?
I'll lose bits for a while. Like right now, I've lost the thread of the John Lennon Paul McCartney. I just drove it too hard. And so now I'm just not going to do it for a while.
Well, when you did it on our show, you called back the heckler. and him taking pictures of your set list and stuff. So yeah. That had to be kind of fun.
That was nice. It's just when because I didn't write it out. I just riffed it on stage over a period of like a couple months.
Yeah.
And then like when I was riffing, you know, her job, you know, what's a job? You know, well, she takes a picture of a bum. And when I was first coming on to that, but then you lose the thread of it. And for me, I just put it aside for a while,
right.
And then come back to it and change it a little bit.
Are there new things you could throw? Because, I mean, you were having him like ask, like, what's Facebook, right? And then what do people post? Like maybe there's even other talk about Tinder or like.
Well, I have not really even sat down with it.
Right.
Like at some point after you riff something on stage, you should sit with it like a puzzle and see what else. Right. I did do one night where, because this is where it would go to a meta thing where it goes, well, it's 2015, so certainly the Middle East must be at peace by now. And then Paul clearly, well, yeah, it's fine. You know, it's just, and so not he gets in a series of lies.
Right, right. Just, humanity's not that fucked up to where we got to figure it out.
Just very specific. And everybody, everybody's healthy and happy. And Russia,
we all got flying cars.
Exactly. That's flying cars and things like that.
All diseases.
And the guy who's a Subway sandwich spokesman, he's still just eating sandwiches, right?
But this is kind of the challenge of stand-up in a way, back full circle here, is like, In the world you guys are growing up in, I just do it to amuse myself because, you know, look, I'll be dead pretty soon, right?
Oh, Jesus.
Well, it might be 20 years, but I mean, you know.
How you open when we walked in, you're wearing cargo shorts, and you go, you can wear shorts at 60, right?
Well, we got, you know, yeah.
You got good legs. I can say that as a heterosexual
from
male.
From the running, when I was in high school running, I had T-Rex arms, like no upper body, and these legs just went huge, and I hated them because I just wanted to have thin distance runner legs, but they're actually shrunken down now. But now they work for me because there's nothing worse.
They finally got the right size.
Yeah,
fantastic.
There's nothing worse than an old guy in shorts. Please, somebody make that bumper sticker. Hey.
There's my wife on cue.
There's your wife, who I think, we may have to cut this out if she does not approve. But my favorite line that you said all night, actually wasn't on stage. It was off stage. Adam was on stage doing a joke about his aunt, who's older, being in
my aunt is pushing 90, and she's an assistant. And she was telling me about her boyfriend, her sometimes boyfriend. And she goes, "Have I told you about my sometimes boyfriend?" I go, "No, Shirley. What's a sometimes boyfriend?" She goes, "Man, sometimes we hold hands." And then I said, "What's his name?" And she goes, "Dick." And I go, "What is his last name?" She goes, "Justice." I go, "Shirley, you're dating Dick Justice?" And she was like, "Yes." And then I go, "Well, I would love to meet this guy because he sounds like a detective / gay porn star." And she goes, "Well, you can't meet him because he's dead." And then I made a joke about how he passed away because she had sex with him too hard. And I think that prompted what?
That prompted you off stage to be like, because Adam's making fun of like geriatric people having sex, and you said off stage, like, "I have sex with an older woman at least twice a week, and it's pretty damn enjoyable."
I don't know what he's talking about.
Did I say that?
Yes.
Well, there you go.
All right, we got the thumbs up from the wife.
Thumbs up.
And then I remember Harlan Williams, without missing a beat, just turned to you and go, "Can I get her number?"
Yeah, he's at my age, basically, right? Or no, maybe he's 50.
But just the look on your face, just like, it's really good. I don't know why you guys are complaining about it.
It was a lot. I think it was about men being obsessed with younger women, too.
Yeah.
Like, women in their 50s are very sexy. Oh, hi, honey. I didn't see you there. Now, please tell them that very rarely are there guys with drills on the deck, right? Never. Okay, just never is good, because irony is what will kill you in life. And irony is one of the funniest things in life.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's
absolutely
ironic. We've been here 1,000 days, never heard a sound. He pressed record. But they can't hear us, so.
No. I don't think so.
Yes.
Not with that attitude.
Don't know what's happening.
Bye, hon. We'll see you later.
Have a great day. You know, I want to tell you, I want to hear your take on this. I just came from, do you know who the New Kids on the Block are?
Of course.
Yeah. So I've become friends with Joey McIntyre from the group because we were in the heat together. And he invited me to go on this concert fan cruise to do stand-up before their shows. It was me, 3,000 women, New Kids on the Block, some crew.
Hysterical.
It was just as a life experience thing to go. But I'm curious, have you ever, when you were coming up, did you ever open for like musical acts or get asked by crazy? Yeah.
Or shows that weren't comedy clubs. This is my first like cruise ship show.
Oh, I opened a lot. At Wolfgang's, I think it's called. Anyway, 600-seat club in San Francisco. After, like when I was in college, $50 and just taking the heat. Robert Palmer will be up in a second, but first, you know.
Fuck, you're not Robert Palmer.
Robert Palmer, Addicted to Love.
I opened for him, opened for Todd Rundgren.
Wow.
Opened for a lot of guys. Al Jarreau. I just bombed. It was death spiral.
Bobcat Goldthwait tells a story about how Kurt Cobain had him open for Nirvana just to watch him bomb, just because that was amusing for him. Just to sit back and watch the comic eat shit every night in front of a few thousand people.
God, you'd think that Bobcat in his full energy would actually be as good as it could get.
Yeah, for
he
a rock
was
show.
Really doing his character.
Yeah.
You know?
But and I mean, I guess you still have that. And it's just such a different energy, the whole comedy. And then, like, especially when they're there for the band, there's something about a rock concert.
Yeah.
The energy. And then if a comic walks on stage.
Well, here's kind of a funny story. It's true.
Okay.
And my brother wouldn't mind this. So I got three older brothers. This is the one who, you know, we shared the bunk beds.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
We never knew at night you'd talk, and then you never knew when it was over. Yeah. It's like a minute later, I guess I'll go to sleep. So anyway, Dad was.
we're still going?
Yeah.
So very close. So I said, well, I'm opening for some band up in San Francisco if you want to come along. He goes, no, because, you know, you just get heckled and it's a nightmare. Mm-hmm. I said, oh, come on. So he comes up. I do the first show, you know, barely survive, but, you know, just get out, you know. So this will be a second show. I can't find him. I don't know where he is. So I go up. I start doing the second show, and some asshole is really heckling me, just really
loudly.
Say? It's him. It's my brother. He met some girls, and I don't know, coke out, whatever he had in him. Hey, he became what he hated that night.
Wait, so what, did he think that the first show went too well? He's like, I'm going to knock Dana down a peg.
I don't think he even knew where he
How
was.
How dare he feel that good about himself?
Because I was going, no. He goes, no, what are you doing? But he never lived that down.
Yeah.
That was, I'll tell you what, though. I'll give corporate dates because so you get some success. So then it's a deal with the devil. So you do corporate dates because they back up the Brinks truck.
Jay does a bunch of those, right? Leno?
Yeah. Jay does. Jay loves them, but they can be as brutal as anything I did in my early days.
Wow. Yeah.
I played a gun show. They're all eating, and the first table was just like this, knife and fork, and I'm looking
back
over my shoulder.
Yeah.
What?
And you're paying, music. And you have to do like 75 minutes
of
death.
Oh, my God. Do you even call attention to the fact, like, hey, you know, maybe I should just let you guys finish your steak first and then keep, like, I mean, do you poke?
No, you kind of, they just throw you out there.
Talk to the people that are listening, pretty much.
Yeah, you just try to survive.
Well, also, you're at a gun show, so that could be a whole new kind of heckler.
One, yeah, that had a whole other element to it. I played to deaf audiences, you know.
What?
I played.
So did you have the translator next to you?
Yeah.
That always provides for at least.
Have you done that?
Yes.
The easiest.
How do they translate like Hans and Franz? Or
What do you? Well, they. I made her say monkeys might fly out of my butt like 20 times in a row. So many monkeys, and she did this thing. You can't see it, folks. You listen. Yeah,
right, but
hysterical.
Then, but the thing is that with sign language, and you find out when you're doing shows like this, is they really have to go for the most obvious symbol with their hands to mean whatever you're saying.
Yeah.
So monkeys might fly out of my butt is. Probably exactly what you think it is.
Yes. And I usually, if it's a woman, you know, because again, this is easy pickings, I just take it to the idea of I really love the comedian. So then they, you know,
right.
No, I mean, I really want the comedian. I want him bad.
I'm probably going to try to sleep with him after tonight's show.
Easy stuff.
Yeah.
I would say my worst bomb was.
Oh, these are great stories.
Yeah. So George Schlatter was. Who did Laughing? He's a big producer. Mm-hmm. So he's doing a Laughing revival in 78, which Robin Williams got on that show. It didn't last long.
Yeah.
And he saw me in San Francisco at the Mustard Seed Cafe, 50 seats. I did my Star Trek chunk, you know.
Yeah.
And I had very little experience. So then he invites me to L.A. I'm going to go meet George Schlatter in L.A. So my parents threw in a couple of $100. I bought a corduroy suit. I thought, you know, it's Hollywood. So I had a corduroy vest, corduroy suit, some kind of cowboy shirt.
Can you still
corduroy.
Wear that in your 60s?
Yeah. No.
Cargo shorts.
Never wear. But it was
cargo
the hottest, tightest thing.
Well, so now we know what he's going to be wearing for the Netflix special.
Yeah.
Corduroy
nights. Corduroy nights. So anyway, while I was down here, they got me a spot at the Westwood Comedy Store.
Yeah.
So very nervous, very green. Went with my Russian girlfriend at the time. Mm-hmm. Tall, beautiful. And they put me up, and it was packed, and I just started to bomb. But I didn't know that you break out of it flop, sweat, just death, humiliation, just mm-hmm. and had no way out. Just kept going, I'm Captain Kirk, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Death. So I get off, and they were so afraid I was going to make the room, everyone leave, that they put up J.J. Walker, you know, Dynamite.
Yeah.
So he went up and looked over at me as I'm sitting down and goes, pay attention, kid, see how it's done. Which I don't blame him. And then I sat, so everyone could see. I just sat in this booth and everyone could see me. And the girlfriend at the time actually sort of scooched over like that. You know, so that was the one that really stood out.
Did she say anything to you?
Didn't
want to be associated with them.
Didn't want to share the same breath.
No, I'm single. I don't know what you're talking about.
Didn't want to go down with the ship. She don't take a dive for nobody. That was one of the worst. What about you guys?
Well, I got a wine glass thrown at me once at a winery. It was when... it was maybe the second year I'd done stuff.
Yeah, and he had a beer mug, a tavern, it's all
shot glass. It was really inappropriate. Well, different types of glassware.
It was in Paso Robles in the upstairs of this brewery, and I had just done all these jokes about playing Wolverine at Universal Studios. That was like my day job for a while. And this woman was just drunk and heckling and screaming a lot. And at one point, she said, I want to give you a kiss. And she came over, so I let her kind of do it, and she slobbered on my face. And I made some comment about how I've just contracted every STD from that slobber or whatever. That makes her even more infuriated. And at one point, I'm in between jokes, and I'm looking down, and I kind of see her arm kind of raise up with a wine glass. And she's about 15, 20 feet away. And I was looking down, trying to think of my next move, and I couldn't totally fathom that what was about to happen. But I see an arm go up, and then I just see it like fling. And so I'm like, in my head, I'm like, oh, the glass is coming towards me. All I think to do is put my hand up to try to stop it. And the webbing of my hands, the bottom part of the wine glass just hits like the webbing of my hands perfectly to where it just kind of sticks to my hand. So I just quickly reach around it. Yeah.
Superstar.
Yeah. So I grabbed this, I snap a wine glass out of midair, and I walked over to her and slammed it down on her table and said, I told you, bitch, I'm Wolverine. Don't fuck with me. Whole place goes nuts. This was like, again, like 2 years in a stand-up. So after this, and people afterwards are buying me drinks and be like, that was incredible. You pulled a glass out of midair. And I'm like, yeah, you know, it's what you got to do. And I thought from then on out, I was like, everything's great from here on out. And then, I go back to the comedy store at 1 a.m. on a Sunday.
I think that probably, I don't know if the word is existential, but there was this comedian and he was really good, but he had a little bit of a temper. This is back in the day. I won't say his name, mm-hmm. but I think it's so funny that he went on stage one night, and again, his stated goal as a comedian was to bring mirth and laughter to get them to enjoy him and remember all his great jokes. Yeah. Within 90 seconds, someone heckled him. He was waiting in the audience swinging fists. So the idea that instead of making them laugh, he was trying to beat them up. I just think that's so funny.
I mean,
it's just such a life U-turn.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to beat the shit out. I was hoping to make them laugh.
Yes.
That didn't work. And now I'm going to waylace them with my fist. So I was in the audience pounding.
Taking swings.
Big guy, too. Just swinging, pounding.
Oh, my God.
I just think that's the greatest. That's nothing's funnier than your goal is to make them laugh, and yet it's roundhouse
rights.
You're
doing the complete opposite.
Right. Kidney punches and all that jazz.
Taking three or four to get one in.
And then I just can't wait until he gets home and his girlfriend just goes, so how was the show? Yeah. And then whatever he has to do next,
he's got blood on his shirt. How was the show?
But I mean, there's two kinds of bombs. I mean, there's the rough set, the rowdy set, but then there's sort of the humiliation set.
Sure.
That's when stakes are high. Like auditioning or something.
Yeah.
And it's not happening. And the room knows it's not happening. But you got to kind of get through it. And your eyes are a little tight. You try to adjust. Acknowledge that things aren't that great. But don't go too far.
Yeah.
Those are the worst ones.
Yeah.
Really,
I would much rather have a rowdy, drunk, heckling crowd.
Yes.
Than silence. Than just... just complete.
Yeah, because at least there's reaction of some sort that you can massage your way through.
Right, and not just people like you had at the gun show, people just like turning around
just not paying attention.
But those are nothing compared to the improv. I'm used to play out here in Melrose, and they give me an 8:15 spot. You know, industry crowd, kind of half full. My manager would come see me. Just death. You come out with your best joke, your first thing, full commitment from the road.
Yeah, right.
Elevating the room.
Ware's been killing in Kansas, so you're like coming back like, this is going to be great.
And, you know, that's the interesting part of stand-up is just this idea of confidence, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I don't think it came naturally to me or something. I think I was really, I don't think I really got confident on Saturday Night Live until maybe the last two seasons, you know?
Yeah.
And with stand-up, I feel like it floats around where maybe you could say I was at 90 or 85.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you start to get to 98 or 99, where the voice is quiet, the voice that's giving you a report card, you know, that you're just actually in the moment, it's very hard.
Yeah.
What do you tell your son as far as, like, I'm sure he's, because he's how many years in?
Well, kind of. Tom's in technically 2 years. Dex, maybe 1 year.
So still both very eager. And, I mean, that's a time when everybody is just impatient because you start to get a little bit of some momentum going, but you just want to be good so quickly.
Yeah, right, and then at a given moment for a second, you know, I go, if you can do one good minute, you can do 60.
Yeah.
But as far as being loose up there and not having any kind of tightness in your eyes, any sort of fear, I don't know, man. It's just maybe just... It takes time. I don't know. Were you guys instantly, within 6 months? Some guys really hit fast.
It was something that it's hard to tell young comics and hard to listen to when you are a young comic, where they just say, no, you're going to suck for a while, and you're going to keep sucking, and you're going to have bad sets, and you're not going to get past the Laugh Factory in your first 2 weeks of doing stand-up.
Like, and even if you are, you're now on a giant list of comedians that have to, call in for spots, and it's just like, it's a constant waiting game of, you get a little bit of validation, but then, you jump through that hoop, only to meet another hoop on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
I try to wrap my mind around how different it is, and I don't know. It just is that numerologically, if there were 100 comedians in the early 80s, are there 1,000 now?
Well,
is
now
it just numbers game.
Yeah. Well, now, kind of in the 70s, 80s, there was kind of that universal path that all comics sort of knew that they had to take. They had to do really well. They had to get on the Tonight Show. From there. But the goal was the Tonight Show, essentially. Now, with so many different paths of social media,
there's not one thing.
YouTube, there's not one thing. You could have a successful podcast, like the About Last Night podcast, which we're on right now. You could have a YouTube channel. You could be a Vine person. You could have Instagram. You could do you can go on any number of late night shows. Now, getting the Tonight Show is just like, okay, what else you got?
Yeah, one of my buddies just got on SNL, just got added this past year from his...
John Rudnitsky.
You guys know him?
He's a good buddy, yeah. He from his YouTube videos, and he'd been doing stand-up, I think, maybe 3 years,
but
not as much as he'd been, doing
sketches.
Videos.
Yeah, and stuff like that. I saw a couple of them. He's got a good, good comic mind.
Yeah.
And some,
he's a good fresh energy, too. And I think
Miley Cyrus licks your face on your first episode. That's kind of that's kind of a welcome to showbiz kid.
You know, two things about when I came through that are kind of interesting. One was, I got out of college 78, 79, and I was in San Francisco. And basically, as I was emerging into being a stand-up, which I never had, and I asked my wife, did I ever talk about being rich or famous? Never. Comedy clubs were being built. Every 3 months, they were finishing a new one. There's carpenters. By the time I left 6 years later to do Saturday Night Live, and that I could make a living just in Northern California. I mean, it must have been, 10 full-time comedy clubs.
Wow.
Foo Bars and, Tommy T's and three or four in San Francisco and all.
Right.
It wasn't like that around the country. San Fran,
I think Boston had a renaissance and there were just more spots. And
you hear stories of Lenny Clark in Boston in one night doing six sets and walking out with $2,000, just in 1986, going around Boston.
Well, no one was famous. There was no YouTube stars. And the Carson guys were in Vegas and stuff, were opening for Sinatra. So the headliners in San Francisco would be like Jack Marion or Lorenzo Motta Warren. Only Robin Williams would come in and out.
Right.
The headliners were just local, homegrown guys with no TV credit. This is so different, you know?
Yeah.
Now guys are headlining based off of a couple TV credits,
Well, the social media thing. Yeah. I don't know how to tell someone to slow down, at 35, you kind of have this figured out. Because they're really seeing people getting ahead without having an act, and then getting an act very quickly. Because I think what I find kind of interesting, just for my own, makes it more interesting, is this idea of anthems and, you know, this new kind of storytelling type comedy, this idea of, you know, if you're leaning into the audience and you're just destruction, that maybe is not really enough. Because you can look at 100 specials and you'll see someone destroying, you know. So it's kind of like, you know, it's this branding, marketing, anthem. I mean, what does break people through, you know, a constituency, you know?
I have no idea. If I knew, I'd be way more famous than I am right now. I'd be in a pool that was surrounded by Pop-Tarts. And,
wow, and that is the dream.
Pool surrounded by Pop-Tarts and supermodels. They're just going like, this is the
supermodel, life. Supermodels named Pop-Tart.
Yeah, sure. Why not? That sounds like an excellent name for a supermodel.
It's your dream.
So
you'll get it.
We're trying to figure out. But speaking of like just people making it, one thing that hadn't happened the last time you were on the podcast was SNL 40, and that has since gone down.
That was
incredible. And just being around, like, to be in that room, was it really a moment where you kind of looked around going, holy shit, like, this show this show has created legends?
It was crazy, the whole thing, because my wife and I are basically shut-ins, you know? So, we got to go to this one. And,
sure. You had to go. There wasn't even an ounce of doubt to go, right?
I mean, No, had to go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did they send you, like, a guest list of who's going to be there, or is it...
They just basically said everybody. You know, we found out Eddie was coming toward the end, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it was just... when you looked at the audience, just the night of the taping, it was like looking at a wax museum. I mean, every single person was famous,
right?
Young and old.
Yeah.
There's Diane Sawyer. There's Tom Hanks. There's Paul McCartney and Eddie Murphy. And, you know, you've got all your peers. And, hey, Bill Murray's in the audience with Amy Poehler. And then over here, it's Tom Brokaw with, you know, whatever, Donald Trump. I mean, it was infinitely just crazy. I was just hanging out backstage, and here comes... Bradley Cooper and Kerry Washington, they really want to get their picture taken with me. And Dave Chappelle wants to know where he can have a smoke. And Chris Rock's telling me about his marriage.
Kanye West wants to know whose speech he can interrupt.
Yeah,
never met Kanye West.
Yeah, he was there, right?
So
yeah,
he was there.
For your Wayne's World sketch, that's right.
Well, we didn't even... I just said to Mike, because I said, look, because we're waiting backstage for an eternity. Everyone's in at 7. We're on at like 11:20.
Oh,
I said, we either should be really flattered... or really pissed. I'm going to just choose to be flattered.
Sure.
Who else could close the show?
Yeah.
I said, look, then they said, we don't know if Kanye's going to do it. This is 10 minutes before we go out there. Well, okay. Because that was a big part of the thing. I said, if we could just keep working Kanye sit down.
Yeah.
So
we
put it on the cards, because Mike's very meticulous, great writer.
Yeah.
But I said, we can just keep going, stop, you know, that'll be, you know.
Yeah.
So he did finally say he would do it, and then I pulled the wrong thing and improvised around
that. Yeah,
but we were lucky that we were in the center of the studio. There's a lot of feng shui. We had no guest stars, so it was simple.
Mm-hmm.
We were right at the center, right, and Lorne's over there with Jack Nicholson,
like,
and we're referring
like you
to
do.
Him.
Yes.
So
did Lorne come to you and say, you know, I want you guys to do...
Lorne called me. You know, a couple weeks before.
Yeah.
And he always just kind of throws it away. It's you and Mike, you know, it's like a Wayne's World sort of a referential, you know. I think it's in the second part of the show, you know. So I said, oh, sure, okay, of course I'll do it.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, in something like that, just the task, and you see all the cast members and that sort of special, the task of everyone getting to say anything, the fact that you and Mike got to do that sketch and have all that time just kind of to yourself.
Well, it was one of the most iconic pieces, I think, in the show's history. There's got to be some that are just no-brainers, but then...
Yeah.
But then I guess when you compile... I mean, it's like, you know, it was like, what, three-hour show or something like that? Or
3.5 hours.
Yeah.
Wow.
Probably could have done another three.
People were going to get their feelings hurt. There was no way around it.
Right.
You know?
And I think people saw that, where they saw that when you saw the audience, you're like, oh, there's no way to give everyone in this audience their just time.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
It can't happen.
Yeah, like, was Ellen Cleghorn pissed they didn't show her, like, audition tape or something like that?
Ellen Cleghorn, great name.
Yeah.
And there were too many cast members. You couldn't say hello to anyone. It was just too overwhelming. It was too...
A lot of small talk. A lot of quick, hey, how are you?
Yeah, Justin Timberlake and Jimmy Fallon, who looked like the new Hope Crosby. And you just felt kind of, you had to remind yourself, hey, wait a minute, I was on this for 7 years. I belong here, you know?
Yeah.
It was a little bit overwhelming that way. But they had me do part of the music medley. Fred Armisen asked me to do the Chopped Broccoli thing, but the only thing about it was that I just did the punchline without the setup.
Chopped Broccoli.
So I said, I don't know if this is funny because I'm going, there is no joke then. Yeah. It really is just that absurd.
It's like you just say, to get to the other side.
Well, it's part of a montage. Yeah. But during the commercial break, we're coming back. I'm in my place and McCartney's 10 feet away. So I know for no one from Revolver. So I started playing the chorus. Your day breaks, your mind aches, you find it all. So I started playing that. And Paul kind of stands up and goes, oh, like that. You know? And then Jimmy Fallon stood up with Tom Hanks. We know what you're playing, you know. So afterwards, you know, we did the final thing, Mike and I, and I went out. I got the wig off, but not the Garth thing off for the good night. So I'm in the T-shirt and the thing in my hair, looking over at Bill Murray and everybody. Yeah. And then, you know, someone's giving me a neck massage, like a back massage, you know, and it's McCartney. Hi, Dan. You know, you look a little tidy, whitey. You know. Digging in the delties. Digging delties with me thummies. With me thummies.
Do you think he's aware of the fact that it's Paul McCartney giving someone a massage is the craziest thing they'll ever experience?
I think that, you know, I can tell the story kind of quickly, but
Take your time.
When I got on Saturday Night Live, you know, Lorne Michaels had me come out to his house. Did I tell you this last time?
No, I don't know. Neilan told us his version of this.
Oh, okay. Well, because I'd called him. But so basically, I got the show, couldn't believe it. Never been on TV, never done sketch comedy, just none of it. And just, I'll come out, you know, you'll stay. And I just thought I was supposed to. And so I was out there in Long Island for like 3 weeks. But during the first week, A. Whitney Brown and I were sharing a room. But, you know, oh, you'll be in Jack's room. You know, Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
So I was calling people. But Lauren said, Paul's coming tonight. So who? Oh, Paul McCartney, you know, that kind of thing.
That's just the
world. With Linda.
Yeah.
And so, again, I'd never really met celebrities, never been on television, you know. So they come in. It's Lorne Michaels. Chevy Chase was in the neighborhood. And A. Whitney Brown and me. So they came in.
My God.
And I didn't want to say something stupid,
right?
You know, like, who thought of Abbey Road? You know, I didn't want to do any Beatle. Is it really a Sergeant Pepper? You know, I mean, the amount of idiocy. So
he's heard it all, and then some.
I had the presence of mind as a pretty young man to say to him, you know, on the album Tug of War, which is only for his real fans, 81, in the title song Tug of War, the more specific compliment, the better. I knew intuitively. In the chorus, when you say, one day I'll be standing up on a mountain with the flag unfurled, but it won't be soon enough for me. What were you thinking? So he just dropped. His eyes just got real big.
He didn't expect that.
Oh. Well, it was just like, it said so much.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I pictured a big old flaggy, you know, thing like that. So after that, we were buddies. And
that's awesome.
He put on a song that he'd made in the city in New York that no one had heard. He just wrote. He had a demo. And he puts it on. So he's 4 feet from me. And we're hearing the song, just the five of us. And it's McCartney Beatlesque.
Yeah.
And that's when he leaned into me and said, you know, sometimes, you know, when you're writing, you try so hard to live up to whatever, you end up ruining the fucker. Which
wow.
I thought, whoa. So then the next night, they came over again. You know, and there was marijuana bean
for
and
sure.
stuff like that, and talking and just listening to everything he said. They came over again, and they brought his new album, Press to Play. And I go, oh, you brought the new album? And then Linda said to him, see, I told you he'd want to hear it. So they were having conversations about me.
Right.
You know.
So then you make the connection, like, Paul McCartney, without me being there and without any prompting from anyone else, is having a debate in his mind, like, do you think Dana would like to hear the album?
Should I bring it? Or is it a bit pushy-wooshy? And she says, would you stop adding the wooshy? Just say pushy. I know, but it rhymes. It's right there for me. I can't help you, wealthy.
It's an alley-oop, baby.
I can't. So we hung out then. And
what's McCartney's munchie, by the way? Like, what's McCartney's Munchies?
McCartney's Munchies sounds like an excellent Cartoon Network show.
I didn't see much food being.
Okay.
But Lauren's a popcorn guy, so okay. probably it was popcorn.
Sure.
But then like 10 years later, after I'd done SNL and everything, his people sent me an album, Flowers in the Dirt.
No
that
way.
Was embossed in a glass case and, you know, to 100 of our grooviest friends, Love Paul, you know.
God.
So that was, and then I hadn't seen him until the 40th.
Yeah.
So I didn't know. So then when I played For No One from Revolver, instead of Let It Be or Hey Jude.
Yeah,
sure.
No.
Now there's a...
I thought the leaf blower was coming through that door for a second.
I'm like, well, are you playing the album for us right now? It doesn't sound that good.
Somebody hold on to Brad.
So anyway, that was just like that. I have a lot of 6 degrees of separation, weird.
Now, I heard that 40th, the after... party was bananas. Did
crazy.
You go to that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We were downstairs for a long time. It was the kind of thing where you had to blow off Leonardo DiCaprio because you're going to talk to Glenn Close.
Jesus.
You know, sorry, Jack White. I've got to talk to Sigourney Weaver. It was everywhere you turn.
Sorry, yeah. Jim Carrey. There's Elton John, right?
Oh, yeah.
And both of them were there, so that's not even an exaggeration.
Yeah.
No, everywhere you were just like a pinball machine. Everywhere you bumped into, celebrity.
Were there people that came up to you that you didn't that you hadn't met, or that you were at least taken aback by that was like. Like you said, Bradley Cooper came up to you and wanted a picture. I mean,
he wanted a picture. Yeah.
Is that for it? You're like, oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you were saying you had to remind yourself, oh, yeah, I was on this show for 7 years.
Yeah, I get it. Okay.
I was thinking.
But it was a nice reminder of how integral you were. I mean, just and how impactful you were in your time there, right? I mean, when people come up to you and fan out, I guess, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if someone's in grade school or high school, whoever you had at the time. For me, it was, you know, probably at a young age, it was more like George Carlin's first album, who I then served Denver Omblet to. I waited on all my, you know, as a waiter.
Jesus,
I waited on Pryor. I waited on Carlin.
You waited on Richard Pryor, and then you eventually starred in a movie with him?
Yes.
In which your name...
In which your character name, and I found this out recently, in the 1988 film Moving with... Richard Pryor, your character name was Brad Williams.
Now I remember.
Yeah.
That's funny. It's hysterical. Prescient. See what I mean?
Who knew that you would later be friends with a Brad Williams?
Yeah. But, you know, it was like a goofy... I played a schizophrenic. The guy let me kind of make up my lines.
That's
and
awesome.
And he said, Richard's not trying at all. He's phoning it in. He says he's winking at the brothers going, I'm just taking the check. So he said, see if you can get him going. So one of our scenes, I was just going ballistic, you know, super energy. And then I finally kind of drew him out. He started doing his Richard thing. But
that's
shy
amazing.
Shy and sweet.
So you kind of had to really like take it up a notch to force. Because
I was asked to.
He was going to look, I mean, what, just by contrast, if he didn't match what you were, like your energy, then he would.
I guess so. Yeah,
man, that's got to be a weird note to get. Hey, the king is over here, kind of sleeping. Can you wake him up, but not piss him off?
Basically, yeah, that's basically what it was. But again, I was just completely in awe of everything that was happening to me for the longest time. You know, so just getting on Saturday Night Live was like, you know, and I'd never done sketch comedy, so.
Yeah.
The like your friend John, you know, you go in there now and then you're a writer, sometime feature, and you're kind of incubating for 2 years and you're learning the ropes and then you're here. And for me, I'd never been in a sketch except the cold opening. That was my first full sketch.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, I did, like, there was a Aliens parody. I played the kind of, we're all going to die, man. So I played that.
Yeah.
And then Church Lady was in there, too, and then Chopping Broccoli. So I didn't have any time to prepare. I was already in my manager, Brad Gray, who does talk like this, came to my dressing room and said, I don't know why it is, but you're the star of the show tonight. This was like at 11:05.
Wow.
Like, thanks for the confidence, manager. I don't know why.
I don't know why this happened. I don't know why this happened, but it's your show. That's what he said. It's your show. I don't know why, but it's your show. So then he left, and I just was swearing in the mirror trying to deal with the pressure. Fuck you. Fuck you. Yeah.
I can imagine.
At what point, we didn't talk about this last time, but I'm curious, at what point did your Tom Brokaw become a, like, was he just such a prevalent news figure? And it was it like, I need, like, did Lauren say, hey, like, we should have, that would be a funny bit to every now and then have where we, just to have a guy doing the news that wasn't, you know, kneeling, doing update, or were you so fascinated by Brokaw's voice? Or
always fascinated by his voice. I don't even remember, did I do it on Saturday Night Live?
Well, I mean, and this is another fact I found out doing some research. is one of my favorite sketches you ever did when you came back to host.
Yes.
You did Brokaw reading absurd ways that Gerald Ford died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
And that, I didn't know, was originally supposed to be on the Dana Carvey show.
It was, and it aired on the Dana Carvey show.
It did.
Oh, I think it aired.
Okay. And then,
or we made an eighth episode. Maybe that eighth episode didn't air, but we did it. We recorded it there, and then when I hosted, we brought it there.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was probably the smartest, most clever. It's like normally when you kill that hard, normally there's this energy component to that mm-hmm. studio, but the idea of something that kind of quiet. You know,
yeah.
Gerald Ford was killed tonight. He was mauled to death by a circus lion at a convenience store. It's like he's swallowing his words as he's trying to say them.
And just, getting interrupted by the...
And it was Robert Smigel who was the voice, right?
He was the voice.
Yeah. And so just the whole concept of Brokaw's going on vacation, so we need you to read all these absurd
possibilities.
Ways in case Gerald Ford dies.
They have every single possible...
Yeah.
And Gerald Ford is dead this evening. You know, victim, I can't remember all the different machinations.
Yeah.
You should look it up.
Absurd canoe accident.
Yeah, yeah. Right,
like,
exactly.
Wait, what? Like,
yeah.
And then you hear your Brokaw just going, so it's like... Do you really think this is going to happen?
Right, yeah. I don't think we should have to do any more of these. I think we've reached a... Come on, you know.
Yeah.
Gerald Ford is not going to die in a canoeing accident. Taft did. Taft, really? Well, I'll say it again. All right, let's start. But Tom was around. He was around Rockefeller Center. You'd run into him.
No kidding.
Oh. And he just all of a sudden, Tom Brokaw's talking. He's a huge guy. You always... You don't know, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, you don't think of Brokaw as
big
being
a... guy
a,
and just, you know...
Yeah, because you see him from the waist up.
Or,
yeah.
you know, Donahue would be around, you know, Phil Donahue. But you did anyone who was around. I did Ted Koppel.
Yeah.
You did whoever was sort of in the ether at the time.
Ted Koppel.
Yeah. I'm Ted Koppel, and this is Nightline. There was a long pause, you know. But
I wonder if those guys going into that profession know that they have to have an impersonable voice.
Well,
yeah, but the voice, like all those guys have such a distinct...
Kind of like being a president where... Everyone can do a president.
Yeah, like Bernie Sanders. Yeah. Like I would vote for him just because I'm like, well, yeah, like you sound like a guy that we all want to probably impersonate.
All could do him. We all could do Bernie Sanders. You know, this is going to be huge. I know there's another tone to Trump. Like mm-hmm. everybody's doing this. It's huge. This.
Yeah.
Right.
But this is this other thing that he does. This is another tone. I guess
when he gets sort of excited or frustrated, like everyone said it's a wig, like and it kind of like goes a little higher with it, right?
Yeah. There's another tone that's higher. There's also this, you know, this down here, but there's this other tone that's
it's also the way that like Jay Leno, like a lot of people, but then we'll get like down like that real quick, like
down here, Japanese guys, these guys are doing the guy, it's fine, but he's an interesting. I don't know if Hillary's elected, I basically retire.
I mean,
he'd find a way.
I guess one of the only one way is you can just go completely absurd with it and just do like an impression that sounds nothing like her, but you commit so hard to it.
I just said politician, but it could be her. It was more of someone who's not naturally gifted. Like Clinton is just a natural, and it's like if I'm elected, you know, it's just this droning robotic. Yeah. We will do better than we are now. You know, it's just like platitudes that mean nothing.
Right.
The hedge fund managers take too much money, so my plan is to make 30 million new hedge fund managers before the end of this. You know.
Yeah.
Which is why I think Kate McKinnon has like heightened her as a personality so much. Like,
you know, I love her because she picks out these weird things and abstracts them.
Yeah.
That really kind of work, and yet they're sort of weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like when she does Bieber, she kind of gets his thing where Bieber gets like kind of shy and he like looks away from the camera like, oh, no, you can't see this. But then he comes back and like direct eye contact.
Yeah.
And that's something you never really pick up on. And then you see her do it. You're like, yes, Bieber totally does that.
Yeah. You find one little hook and then just make it a much bigger deal.
Is that kind of how you approach any impersonation or character, is just to find that first?
I guess. I think I just get bored a lot. Just trying to take it, you know.
I guess just ADD.
Just wanting to take it to a different place. I mean, I don't really, with Obama, you know, I don't really care about it being accurate. It's just eventually it started killing.
Yeah.
But it didn't really kill until like, so this is seventh year to like maybe a year ago. Before that, it just wasn't really happening.
Now, like when you do, because you've been doing a lot of voices recently, Hotel Transylvania 2, Rick and Morty.
And I'm doing Pets.
Oh, really?
Are you really?
Pets with Louis C.K. and Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
I play a dog that's its back legs are paralyzed. So they go, how you doing? And I'm just doing the grumpy old man, basically. Paralyzed. Come on, I don't like you or anything about you. Just doing that Lionel Barrymore. Because that's what they wanted.
Yeah.
But it's pretty funny.
That's
pretty
amazing.
Funny character, the cranky dog.
Now, what's the difference between like creating a character for a sketch and then
animation?
Like, yeah, because Adam does a lot of voiceover stuff in animation. So how do you... Do they give you a drawing of the character? Or do they, like... And then how do you develop it?
Well, in that one, because Chris Meledandri, you know, owns the company, and he always loved that character.
Yeah.
He's like the head of Illumination.
That helps.
Doing Pets.
Sure.
He kind of asked me to do a version of that. But as we got there with the director and everyone, and they were all in Paris, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
And you see them on a screen, you crack a joke, and you'll see them like this, and then you see them laughing. It's very cool. It should be in a movie. Mm-hmm. But we went through all kinds of things. Every once in a while, I'd just go through 10 voices. I go, well, maybe we could, you know, because you can use old voices and then call them characters. Like, I was just doing Cary Grant. What if the dog talked like this? Well, I can't believe it. I'm itchy all over. I don't like the way, because that's just a very interesting voice. So a huge part of your audience would be vaguely familiar.
Right.
Especially if they hear that voice with the new, like the drawing
the new thing,
of
something. Yeah. So you go to a lot of different voices and then you don't know what you're going to do.
Like your Caitlyn Jenner could probably be even one of the options.
Caitlyn Jenner. I don't know. I've lost it. You know. I don't want to go back.
Sounds like Jimmy Stewart a little bit.
Yeah. Well, Jimmy Stewart. Yeah. Well, Jimmy Stewart's a good voice to hear.
Yeah.
For a dog. Yeah. Well, why does Lassie seem to be the one who knows how humans talk? Well, he only barks and everyone's interpreting it. I don't understand. No, these are good. Yeah. They're fun voices. They just work through things. The one on Hotel Transylvania with Smigel had written that part so specifically that he just...
Did he write that movie?
Well, he was in on it with Sandler and his gang, you know.
Gotcha.
So he had a very specific, hey, guys, you know, kind of character, a very light, fluffy kind of, come on, team, let's go.
Yeah.
And that
movie is making all the money right now.
I know.
It's making...
That's awesome.
I hope you have a back-end deal with that.
No, you don't. Yeah, you want to get, like, you know, I don't know who pays the animation, but you want to get one where then it's a global monster hit and they can't possibly do without your voice.
Yeah.
Right.
And then you just...
Do all the toys, right? That's kind
of toys, video games.
Do all the toys. Yeah, I think that Eddie and Mike did very well with Shrek. I'm guessing.
Yeah. I'm gonna
it's
go.
I'm 5 billion. Even 1% is a
Now
with Eddie at the SNL thing, was that I know people were like, you know, weirded out that he didn't, you know, do a bit or any sort of shtick. Like, did you even have a thought about
I
that?
I just thought about myself mostly.
When am I on?
I'd seen Eddie, you know, I don't really know him. I just figured that...
Your path didn't cross at SNL? Or
No.
Yeah, I'm trying.
The only way it did cross is when I got a little holding deal with NBC. Stop me if there's anything I've told you guys.
Nope, none of those.
Holding deal with NBC, and I was cast to play Mickey Rooney's grandson in a situation comedy. Because I kind of looked like him or whatever. So I was cast, and then it shot in New York. Nathan Lane was my co-star.
Nice. Oh.
And Mickey thought I was gay. And I had to, you know, and Nathan was afraid that Mickey would find out about him. So he'd put his arm around Nathan, look at me, and go, I'm just glad I like girls. He had his arm around Nathan. Yeah.
Nathan
seriously,
Lane?
Can't make it up. Yeah, Nathan Lane. It was brilliant. Hysterical. Me and Nathan Lane and Scatman Carruthers,
who
would just be in the bathroom smoking weed, you know. Hey, and then he asked me if he could get some pot, and I wasn't ever a big pot smoker, and I can't even believe I did this, but I got some pot during the break from San Francisco Bay Area, maybe Santa Cruz Gold or something. I guess I packed it in the suitcase because I gave it to him, and his pot was horrible, so... The next day in the elevator, and he was from the 1930s, basically, he goes, the music was good. Might I have a pound? So after the series ended, my brother Scott and I, the guy,
yeah.
We got like a bag of pot, like a grocery, you know,
wow.
a pot. We weren't really potheads. We mostly like beer, but we just, and we drove down to Van Nuys to his house and went in, and he had a little band, he sang songs with his little guitar, and we just gave him this giant thing of pot. Super nice guy.
Wow.
But long story short, so I'm in the Rockefeller Center. I'm playing the straight man because Hollywood, which will all be in my book, I got hired a lot just being looking innocent and sweet. And I was doing the clubs on the side.
Yeah.
So the first day at rehearsal, Mickey always had a .38 revolver, you know.
Oh, that's
and he'd bring it out. Light, they're not gonna get me because he hated New York. He'd walk. He said he walks with his hand. Mickey, no one's trying to get you. This grip is cock on. He would throw it. You know. And he did say famously, "I was the number one star in the world. You hear me? Bang." The world. I mean, he said that once a thousand times.
Wow.
Because he was the number one star in the world.
Yes. And he wanted to remind you of that.
And he called his business manager in 1950, said, "This is Mickey Rooney. I'm broke." And his business manager said, "How can you be broke? I own a yacht named after you." And then Mickey would just look off. So I so wanted to be on Saturday Night Live. It would be like a dream. I didn't think I ever could. So this is 1980. I'm on the sixth floor of New York where Fallon shoots his show now. Mm-hmm. And I would go up on Thursdays, and they let me sit in the bleachers. So I'd watch Joe Piscopo and Eddie Murphy and them rehearsing, thinking, oh, man, I'd love to be up here. And then 72 months later, I was up there.
Jesus.
Isn't that weird?
But so you never, so, and during in that cross, I mean, with Eddie, it was, him being there, I feel like, was such a cool thing, but I don't think anybody expected him to do, right, just because he hasn't, like, come out, like, he hasn't, you know, he's talked about doing stand-up again, but, you know, he's been at clubs, but he hasn't gone up. So
yeah, I don't really know. You know, I can only say for myself, it's a lot of energy and vulnerability. And I think after a period of time, like I've always kept my hand in it. But, you know, there was a period of time where I hardly did stand up at all for a year and a half doing movies and stuff. And now, you know, I see Sandler doing some sets. I see John.
He was at the store last week for Rob's friends. Spade and Friends,
But it's a certain kind of vulnerability, and I think once you get untethered from being out there like that, because if you're on movie sets, it can be as small as this right now, you know? And what you doing with that gun? Cut, you know, and they'll see you in an hour. You know?
And it would be putting yourself out there to not doing any, essentially, live performing, and then all of a sudden you're on SNL 40 with impossible expectations.
Right.
So I didn't mind him doing that. Of course, the fan in me, the fanboy, wants to see him do any character, like come out and do Buckwheat again, for the love of God. But, you know, but at the same time, just to see him on that stage was just really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you go back and you just look at the tape, because we have the tape, and you see him, because I had heard about him before SNL from somebody, just the confidence, you know. And again, I don't know if he could even get more confident. He seemed maybe started at 15, 16, or no problem with clubs.
Well, I mean, you sell out Madison Square Garden by yourself by age 21. It's a good confidence,
But when you think about him when he's doing James Brown, just the energy, just the electric energy of going to get in the hot tub. And just so much bubbling the band cooking. Yeah. I mean, that's just like, that's going to kill no matter what. And then everyone probably puts the toe on. Row! I mean, so it's like just kinetic, you know. So I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe people, I mean, sometimes he'll refer to himself as retired and he's 53 and, you know.
Yeah, I don't see how you would do it for that long and then just totally stop. But I guess it's like you're saying, like you're keeping your hand in it. So it's like you're not.
I heard he did a set recently, though.
What?
Back East.
I
heard he dropped in.
Wow.
Where?
I know, somewhere in either Manhattan.
It's good for him
New
to
Jersey.
Not let that become total public knowledge, but
You know, I mean, he's got that. He's got a lot of weapons. I mean, he's got that ear, and you're right. You just want to see him. It's kind of like Michael Jordan. Just take one shot.
Just stick the tongue out, dunk it once. We'll all be thrilled. We'll all just go nuts. I think the question that everyone wants us to ask you is, after Daryl Hammond and Norm MacDonald, are you the next Colonel?
Yes. I was teasing Norm MacDonald about that. We were texting. I said, "Norm, I'm next." He goes, "Really? What are you? They didn't even tell me." I kind of think Norm's, I think just like seeing him do that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I would just watch him do that for years. I'll do it if they want me to do it.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know what my take would be, because Daryl did it with prosthetics as like kind of an actual impression.
Right.
Norm just plays Norm,
right,
which is funny. I think Lovitz would maybe be the funniest guy.
Wow.
Hello, I'm the colonel.
If you want a bucket of thighs, come to me. So you heard it here first.
Popcorn shrimp, you're welcome.
The recipe's a secret. Jealous? You're not going to know.
I want them to go through every SNL cast member they can.
Jesus.
And just give everyone a month of being
That's
the colonel.
Not a bad idea.
I'm in. We did the Hans and Franz. That one worked out.
Yeah, and now they got the Coneheads going for State Farm.
Everyone's going State Farms. The lady is, they've got an option on the bitch, but I don't know if she's going to come out to play, because she does have that kind of your naughty parts. And I didn't even want to be that pornographic, but they wouldn't let me say penis. So I said, can I say naughty and gorge bulbous parts? And I go, okay.
Which sounds worse.
Much worse.
Way worse.
Engorged and willing. Yeah. I actually
bulbous
was
parts.
Making me laugh the other day. I don't have an impression of it. But, you know, I do like Trump scares Putin.
Yeah.
I thought it'd be great if he goes, you know, I'm afraid of the man with the big orange head. I don't know if I did that at your show.
Yes.
Probably the first time I did it. So then it's like, you know, maybe you would like to meet my Secretary of Defense, Ted Cruz. And it would just be like a total Bible thumper. The blood of Jesus Christ and the Lamb of the heat. You know, just the idea of that guy versus Putin. Really frightening him.
Yeah.
Because of like
Vladimir. Oh,
yeah. And the blood of Jesus' name.
But then you just have Vladimir, who's just straight.
I just did the fake thing, you know.
I can't do the fake Russian.
Yeah.
I have like three. Just say Stalingrad, Leningrad, Solovyovsky.
Yeah, just start naming.
I enjoy doing the podcast. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. It's just the rhythm of
by
the
KFC.
Innocence. It's like Garth, basically. By the way, I've been doing this lately because it's just low-hanging fruit for me.
What's that?
Is it my imagination or does Ben Carson basically sound like Garth? I don't think we really should have a Muslim president.
Holy shit, he does.
So it's a different modality in there somewhere. But in essence, yeah, you could have Ben's world.
Yeah.
Our party on, Donald.
Oh, my God.
Well, because they both do the awkward laugh after they say something serious.
Yeah.
I mean, Ben just got in trouble for saying, like, I wouldn't be a shooting victim because I would just get a bunch of people together and we'd all charge the gunman. And then he laughed. And then you're like, why the fuck did you laugh there? Yeah.
That's
psycho?
Not where you're supposed to do that.
Can't get all of us. Come on, let's charge him.
And he started laughing.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, so fantastic. Wow, I didn't even see that.
Yeah, that's just a gift from, you know, whatever.
Sure, you get anyone that allows you to break out the Garth naturally. So
I know, it is kind of weird. I just, it's a good problem to have. But I get it when some people see me, I understand. It's like, you know.
Is he going to do
it? Even if I accidentally start talking like one of those main five or six characters, I think that sounded like Bush, didn't it?
Yeah. You
know, and I totally understand it. You know, I totally get it. I just, I've managed to dance around it and then do other stuff. I don't know why I make it so hard. Why don't I just come out in costume and say, fuck it. You want it, I'll do it. I would do it. I'm just too lazy to bring the suitcase. I've got a few wigs. I've got the dress upstairs.
Oh, shit.
Oh, wow. No,
how many Garth wigs do you have?
No, I don't have any Garth wigs because Church Lake, technically, I guess I own, but, you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's why I had a second dress made years ago.
Still waiting for that. I think you should write a mockumentary about, like, just the Church Lady now and, like, like a Netflix thing, like where it's, you know, you highlight, you know, when she became popular and then just you're following her around now. And doing like cutting back and forth and having her kind of take you down a memory lane.
Church Lady to me was always about 65. So I'm only arriving at the age where I don't look like a young guy in a wig.
Right. You know? Yeah. So now so it's the perfect time.
Right.
And with her talking about texting and tweeting and putting your naughty parts on the social
naughty
media.
Naughty parts media.
Or maybe she's maybe she's never left her. Where was she from?
Bible Belt.
Right.
Probably Des Moines or something.
Yeah, so maybe she's never left her home in Des Moines, and now she's going to go on some road trip to see America.
Well, I had an idea for a movie. It would need to be written out, but it was basically Church Lady in the Malibu Beach Party. So basically, going to a symposium in Santa Barbara, whatever, Bible camp, and then her car breaks down. And it's like Judd Nelson's having a party. Maybe it'd be Charlie Sheen at this point. Yeah. You know? And she just destroys everyone, goes around. Wow. Interesting. You're Chloe. Oh, I see. Your bottom's very round. You know, like, but I don't know if you could take a whole hour of it.
I think you could.
I'll pitch it to Netflix.
Yeah, the same way they had like the Pee Wee Herman movies like that. Like,
did Netflix
kind of sounds
do
like the same
one
thing.
Or gonna do one?
I think they're going to.
And also, I mean, HBO did the live Pee Wee show, and that crushed. I know.
And Pee Wee has a thing is like a little bit like me playing Garth. Like Paul Rubens, who's brilliant, but he still looks really, really young. But Pee Wee's kind of the man child.
Yeah.
So you just got. There's a point where.
Totally.
But he still does it beautifully.
Do you know Paul personally?
No.
Yeah.
I don't know. I always loved the character. Really appreciated that character.
Yeah.
Never really did it as an impression.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you acknowledge to your fans why, like, when they come out to see you, that they do want to see the old characters. Because, you know, if you went to see Aerosmith and then they didn't play Dream On, you'd be like, hey.
Oh, totally. And I don't really mind doing them. I don't really feel ashamed of doing them. I just want to do new lines with them.
Right.
I mean, the Church Lady, to me... In some ways, it just seems really, on one level to me, really, really intensely hacky.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I think of, wow, but could I think of something that potent that would destroy that? I don't know if I can.
Right.
So it's like that attitude of condescension will always be funny.
Yeah.
It's like, well, Adam and Brad, we've got our little microphones. It's like little penises that we grip tightly. I mean, once you go into we and this, you guys could do it too. You go totally into this land where you could never run out of lines.
Yeah. And the same way every guy could turn anything into a dick joke, the church lady could look at anything
and it's sexual.
Yeah. Find sexual or Satan in it or whatever. Yeah.
And Hans and Franz is just all better. And, well, your little buttocks are like marshmallows. You're lucky I don't have a campfire here. Believe me. I mean, that's just a fun rhythm to do. So do I just,
I'm curious, when you were in the hospital after your surgery, would you ever pull them out in... I mean, to make yourself laugh or staff or...
When I was being wheeled down on the gurney to for the bypass, which I was...
We didn't talk about that at all last time, by the way.
I know. I'm supposed to potentially... Here's David Spade's book for all you people. There it is. David Spade is almost interesting, the memoir. Now available in all...
Well, now he has to do our podcast. Yeah, he just booked his book free of charge.
There you go. Yeah, I remember when I was they're wheeling me down there, and they give you a couple of pills, but you're still pretty much, you know, and they wheel you in there, and then, you know, they're going to saw you in half, basically.
Is it a triple bypass?
This one was a double. It was like memory arteries that just went over.
And did they do the wrong one?
It was kind of like the main lower anterior descending is like your big pipe on your left side.
Uh-huh.
And it has little branches. Instead of hitting the big pipe, you hit a branch.
Oh.
He connected it to a branch. So there's it didn't really harm me. But it didn't fix the problem. It was like, whoops. And I remember thinking, the comedian thought, how do they make sure they're going to find the right artery, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I thought, don't be stupid. They must have a system. You know, apparently they didn't.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds absurd, but my dad, his own doctor told him, hey, when he had a hip replacement surgery, they said, go to your good hip and with a big Sharpie, write no.
Right.
And just so they don't get in there and
just
be like,
in case.
All right, let's go to... Oh, he wrote no with a Sharpie. That's
Thank
not the
goodness.
Hip. Let's
see
the other
be
one.
That, yeah. So, yeah, that was, I was when they wheeled me in there, and underneath this little towel, I assumed that was whatever saw they were going to use. So I was doing Woody Allen because it was natural. This isn't a joke for the pot. I mean, on the gurney about to get sawed in half. I'm like, you know, you just want to know what's basically under the towel because, you know, I get nauseous, the sight of blood, you know. And then you count backwards, and it's 6 hours later, and you've got a morphine drip with a button, like a monkey.
Mm-hmm. that you can control.
You see the nurse, and you just go. I said to her, "My God, you're so beautiful."
I'm like, God, you're just the most beautiful one I've ever seen. She goes, I'm 57, honey. It's the morphine drip. You know? And she did the metaphorical, the acting out the cigar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hey, honey. But to me, it was like so. But yeah, I do. Yeah, I do use it, you know.
But what? So then you had to go and get a second surgery. Yeah.
No, I never.
Okay.
Well, there's two kinds of surgeries for you kids who want to. I mean, there's Roto-Rooter through the femoral artery, and they put in a little metal stent.
Right.
You guys know about that?
Yep,
I do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So basically, I just had right around this corner, the first diagonal and the lower anterior descending. That's the only place I had gunk. The rest of my arteries are wide open, and I grew collaterals. But when they kept putting in stents and Roto-Rootering, but they would what they call restenose, which is sort of too much scar tissue. Your body literally has no mechanism. It, like, if you're stabbed on a battlefield, it knows to clot.
Yeah,
you know, but it has no mechanism for a controlled injury inside the artery. Yeah. Oh, don't clot. Don't, no scar tissue this time. No, we don't need scar tissue to paste over stuff.
Yeah,
so that was
body.
The problem. I missed it by 4 years. Then they have drug eluting stents that retarded any scar tissue. So, but basically, they did a final Roto-Rooter. The stent was already there, but they just opened it, and I had it checked last year, wide open, just no rhyme or reason.
Huh? And
Jesus,
I read somewhere that Sinatra passed away in the room
in
next
my
to
arms.
You.
Yeah,
in my arms.
Like, why not make the story?
Yeah,
no, 90.
Better, Brad. Dana, time to go. That's my.
So Sinatra. Once I, you know,
it's not good, but whatever.
Summer wind.
Hold me. I was just trying to do.
Hey,
full Martin, doing it.
You did it your way, Frank.
But yeah, he passed in the.
Well,
room,
I had
in,
done
in
that when I discovered that they bypassed the wrong artery and they Roto-Rooted it open that night. This was like May 8th or 10th. You could look it up for the night he died.
Yeah.
I was just in my room reading People magazine or something, like a midnight or whatever. And, they said, what's all the hubbub around? Frank just checked in next to you. Frank Sinatra.
What's all the hospital hubbub?
And then he
hubbub?
Went down to the ICU. That's where he died. But he was in the room next to me for a while.
Oh, jeez.
And it was like, no, wait a minute. So I'm the little kid from San Carlos, California. So I'm just a little kid in his pajamas watching the Dean Martin variety show. And there's Frank Sinatra. And he's this icon beyond life. And then our paths go all the way to this date at this hour. For why? Because that guy bypassed the wrong artery. I'm in this room and Frank is next to me.
Holy
really? Seriously?
And,
wow.
And right. And literally his last few hours on this planet.
Totally.
That's when you
I was the only one in Hollywood who was there. And I told Joe Piscopo this, and his eyes got real big because Joe's got so many Sinatra stories.
Yeah.
There we were at the Copa, you know. And I go, well, he died in my arms, basically, you know, so that really gets their attention.
Oh, yeah.
This is another weird thing that happened to me. Me and Frank, I mean, what?
I think that might be the title of your memoir, is just another weird thing just happened to me.
It's just well, at first I was thinking I wouldn't believe it either when I really start adding up some of the weird shit that's happened to me.
Yeah.
There's weird stuff than that.
Well, I mean, 2 weeks later, Phil Hartman and Bren Hartman happened.
Yeah,
to bring us to a more sad note. But
no kidding.
I mean, after the botched bypass, really, they might have to chop me in half again. They missed the artery. I had my Indian cardiologist at Cedars. I said, "Give me a number. What are the odds for a healthy one person like me? Giant arteries just swing over the mammaries with microscopes and two assistant surgeons just looking in."
Yeah,
he said, "Just give me something." He goes, "Oh." About 30,000 to one. Okay, thank you. And you're fired, bitch. No, he's the one who helped me out.
Yeah, so you were the one. All right, so, okay.
No, Cedars Sinai, was the one, they fixed me up.
Okay.
Dr. Eichler.
Yeah.
But by that point, I'd done so many of these procedures where you're just sleepy. Not. I was knocked out for the bypass,
right.
Of course.
Yeah, God, I would hope.
Give me a wood.
We gave him a NyQuil. It's not working.
But I was watching it on TV and watching them go in. And
That's
we were talking.
Crazy.
He goes, "You want to push it a little harder?" I go, "Yeah, let's go for it. Fuck this."
Yeah.
Open it a little bit more.
Wait, push it harder. What do you mean?
Just open it bigger. Wow. There was a judgment, and there's pressure, like blown into a tire, you know? But you want to clear it out enough, you know? Why it didn't scar tissue that time, nobody knows. So I'm still here.
Thank God.
And I'm
Thank
fine.
God for
I
that.
Never had any damage or a heart attack. That's the big thing. But when usually I tell people that, it's thou doth protest too much. Like, oh, he must have had one. Look at why would he even bring that up?
He's got cargo shorts.
It's a huge line in the sand.
where, you know, you have a heart and you have damage, or you're just, you're whole. So I'm fine. Yeah. I mean, how could I look like this, have this kind of energy? I mean, come on, seriously. You saw the shorts.
You saw the shorts.
I'm going to live long enough. I want to live long enough so my young friends, so I can see them as old men. So I don't really care about being 90, 95, but I want to see you guys in your 60s.
What does a dwarf look like in his 60s? We're going to find out.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you stay out of the sun.
Yeah. This is true.
Stay out of the sun.
Dana, I can't thank you enough again.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah. We should do this more often.
We should.
I wouldn't mind that
we'll
at all.
We'll do it weekly.
Will you guys text me what equipment I need to have one? Because then I got to have you on my podcast.
Yes.
We will do that in a second. I mean, how big a setup 1,000%. Is this?
Very minimal. I mean, it's one Zoom. It's three mics. It's a memory card. It's a laptop. It's...
And one dwarf. Yeah. So you just got to find yourself a dwarf.
Can you be on my podcast too?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
We'll do like the cross-mogin.
Pod slut. Red Williams. Hey, this is the pod slut. I'm the guy. Is anyone the sidekick or what? Who's the sidekick?
There's no sidekick. It's just,
when we first started, he got offered to do the podcast and then asked me to co-host it with him.
Yeah. Okay.
But then once we started doing it, it was only us for... We never had guests, so it was just both of us. And
right.
Yeah, and there was definitely a Darth Vader to Ben Kenobi moment where Adam was like... When we last met, you were the teacher, but now I am the master.
Well, I think what happened is I took over all technical responsibilities.
Yeah.
So
now he's on the computers and he edits and he does the ads. And I just sit here and be funny on cue.
He provides the beautiful ass and the beautiful comedy.
That was a running gag. I'll leave you with this. On Saturday Night Live when Farley came in and Spade or whatever. Mm-hmm. When they came in and they would kick ass on a sketch, there was just a running gag. I would just say to him, as a Hans thing, I go, the student becomes the teacher. So when Spade guest hosted or he came out and that was the first thing he said, the student becomes the teacher. Oh. That was like, you know, so anyway, yeah. So it's been fun. You guys
have been awesome. Thanks for doing it again.
Yeah.
And now I think
you guys make it easy. They came to my place. They actually traveled. And
yeah. Well, we heard rumors on the blogs about the cargo shorts, and we had to come see live in the flesh, see what those calves really looked like.
So now we're not even going to Instagram a picture of you. We're just going to be us bending over next to your cargo shorts.
Next to the Carby calves.
Sure, you can take a picture.
Hashtag Carby calves.
To show... I mean, I don't. It's the wife likes him, so you know.
That's all that matters.
The wife likes scruff.
Yeah,
She likes the shorts. I mean, it's pretty simple math, guys. It's like I don't want to wear that. I don't want to do that. Well, wear do whatever will make you money and get you laid. That's what you do in life.
Yeah,
that's your barometer.
That's what drives us.
But that's not natural. But does it make you money and get you laid? I had a guy like, you can't whiten your teeth. Well, would you rather kiss a woman with yellow teeth or white teeth?
Yeah.
What? You ain't kissing nobody.
Thanks, Dana.
Thanks, right, guys.
Let's go.
See you next week.
Can we dress Brad up in a church lady dress, please?
Done.
So, that's the show.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right?
You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.